The Around the NFL Podcast. Went pro in creed bombing.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Enjoyed the look on Greg's face there. Pure discomfort as you brought your mouth close to his face.
I would say it's more like disgust.
Yeah. I mean, if you creed bomb.
Surprise.
Creed bombing in the open of the show, I'd never done that before. So even, what are we now, 504 shows in, you got to keep it fresh. Just like Mark, just like a marriage.
Yeah.
That's absolutely correct.
Just like your marriage.
That's also correct, as thousands of people analyze my personal life.
If you are watching this on Periscope, hello. How are you? This is our second Thursday Periscope program where we previewed week 17 last week, and now here we are. The playoffs are upon us. Wild card weekend. So we are going to break down each of the four wild card games, two on Saturday, two on Sunday, in a show that is brought to you exclusively by Mr. Flames Economics Class in The Hague, the Netherlands.
Mr. F.
And a little bit, before we get into the games, a little bit of house cleaning. The people have spoken by a 52-48% margin. Hank won the vote to settle our Osweiler prop conflict. 4% margin of victory.
Can you explain what the conflict was?
Well, the conflict was that I had Hank, during our sandwich props, had approached the group and said, hey, a collection of free agent quarterbacks, Brock Osweiler among them, none of them will lead their team to the playoffs. I took him on that prop, and despite my contention that Brock Osweiler is on the Houston Texans and was the starter for the majority of the games and is their wild card starter, I was outvoted. So a victory, a 4% margin of victory. Another win for the two percenters up on the third floor. Henry, I know you're listening. I want you to know I will honor the result. You trumped me. And speaking of Trump, congrats to Wes, who went full Putin in conspiring against me and indirectly the Around the NFL Podcast.
I have a bit of a story to tell.
Oh.
Now it's story time with the mailman.
Okay.
This is a story of the AFC South.
Yes, Vladimir, go on.
Down at the old AFC South racetrack, four horses about to take the start. You've got a yearling sired by American Pharoah, not quite ready to go. You've got a donkey over here in stall number four. You've got an old clomper, a draft horse, on its last legs.
Yes.
And now you've got a chestnut-colored thoroughbred in his prime, ridden by a drunk jockey, trained by Bob Baffert. The gates fly open. Of course, the thoroughbred jumps out to a great thunderous start. And then slowly, you see that the drunk jockey cannot control him. He's weaving all over the place. The yearling comes along. The old clomper comes along, and it's neck and neck at the turn. We reach the quarter mark, and the drunk jockey falls off the horse.
Mm.
He's down. The thoroughbred wins the race on his own. Figure comes out of the crowd, approaches the drunk, passed out jockey. It's Around the NFL's Dan Hansis. He wakes up the jockey, throws on a garland of roses, and said, congratulations, you led that horse to the victory. That's the logic you were using for Brock Osweiler leading the Texans to the playoffs.
Went a long way for that.
So you're saying that Dan is the drunk jockey?
No, I'm saying he's the guy in the crowd who thought that the drunk jockey deserved all the credit for the thoroughbred winning the race.
No, it never was. You never quite got it, Wes. And I would tell you, Wes actively campaigned on Henry's behalf. If you go into the verified,
well, we all did.
No, but if you go into the verified at mentions of my Twitter account, it is Wes shaming over 50 people about who had the audacity to side on my side of things.
First of all, I did not actively campaign. I told anyone who came to me that they were born without logic and never developed common sense, which is clear.
Also, Spice Rack came to my defense, which was nice to see.
Which did not help your cause.
And Wes wrote him off forever.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's gone.
What?
A little overly invested in a prop bet that didn't involve you, I'm just going to say.
I, I'm invested in common sense, which in this day and age just is not used enough.
Well, 52% of the people agreed with you.
Yeah, I mean, it was over almost 4,000 people voted, 52-48. I'm not a disgraceful loss on my behalf. And but Wes, you were the Putin to Henry Trump. That's how I got Hillary'd, and that happens. And I have to, just like Hillary did, I'm accepting it. But I'm going to point out the injustice.
That makes Greg Bill Clinton, and I'll be Chelsea Clinton.
Much like the Democrats ran a rotten candidate out for their election,
you
ran a rotten logic for your...
Saying goodbye to the four Periscope viewers still left after all of this.
The results, close. They were very close.
Greg's next idea, cut out mirth.
No.
Speaking of which, Greg, while we're here, I mean, I'm starting to pick up an idea that maybe... piece by piece, you're trying to deconstruct the podcast until there's nothing left.
You know, Wes made a great comparison, you know, trying to be like David Letterman. You know, David Letterman doesn't use the same bits for 15 straight years. You change up your bits every now and then. You know, you do it for 4 or 5 years. Sometimes some segments go bye-bye, and you make up some new ones.
David Letterman also paid, you know, what, upwards of $20 million a season. There's another vast difference.
Get in the writer's room, then come up with some new bits. Yeah. That's all.
You might have a new bit today.
Ooh.
Little preview.
Pressure's on. Pressure's on. All right. Listen, we got to settle that. Wes, also, you came to me and asked to set up a drop for you. Hey, don't do it and then attack me when I'm helping you.
That was the fun of it.
That's it. I have to do it. The United States declared sanctions. I declare vengeance. That's you, Chris Wessling.
All right.
For what you've done.
Okay. It was worth it.
Well, that's the last way you want to open your 2017, Wes, with Dan declaring vengeance on you.
All right. We have a lot of football to get to, so let's get into it. The first game up, the primetime affair between the Detroit Lions, who backed into the playoffs, finishing 9-7, traveling to Seattle to face the Seahawks. And I think a good way to get into this game, gentlemen, because – it's an interesting game. You would think that the Lions have no chance, and I think a lot of people are picking the Seahawks here, but I really, truly believe that the Seahawks are very flawed right now, and this could be a game. So I'm going to throw something out there. Oh, one of our favorite games. What's more likely?
What's more likely?
What is more likely, gentlemen? Matthew Stafford against the Seahawks in Seattle passes for 300 yards. With a passer rating north of 90, or the Seahawks lead by double digits by halftime. Because I think this game goes one or two ways. Seattle gets ahead early and kind of pours it on, and the game's not that competitive. Or they play it pretty tight, and this thing goes right down to the wire. What's more likely?
I think it's Matthew Stafford. I mean, he does that even in games where he doesn't play that well because they have no running game because they're always throwing. And the Seahawks, to me, don't seem like a team that's going to put anyone away early. They started off terribly against the Cardinals. They started off poorly against the 49ers. There's something weird. This used to be a team that was greater than the sum of their parts on defense. Now it's like they're worse than the sum of their parts. They should be good, but they haven't really stepped up in the last few weeks.
I'm with you. I think this will be a closer game than some might expect. I covered that 49ers Seahawks game last week, and it was a Seahawks team that just simply could not run the ball until Alex Collins came on towards the end. I wonder if he might have a larger role in this game. They cannot do some of the fundamental things that made them that tough, rugged NFC team of years past on offense. I think this game is going to be tight down to the wire, so I go with option A. Matthew Stafford, who's been solid all year, will be all right.
I go against all of you. Seahawks at home, considering their postseason history, considering the experience on that team, and that Matthew Stafford has 2 300-yard games in the last 13 games. This is not an explosive Lions offense, especially when you take away Theo Riddick, who's one of the top three pass-catching backs in the NFL, and a big key to their offense. I don't see that being a close game, and I know the Seahawks defense isn't the same with Earl Thomas. I think they have communication issues right now, leaving the middle of the field open, but they've got guys like Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril, K.J. Wright, Bobby Wagner,
right.
Richard Sherman. They've got a defense still filled with playmakers. Frank Clark, who has double-digit sacks and had a great game last week. Atiba Rubin had a great game last week.
I mean, Pete Carroll said this week, everything that's happened up to this point doesn't matter. And that's kind of what they're hoping for. Because tangibly, they have those great players on their team, and the intangibles are this. No one else has a team that led the league in scoring defense four straight years, and all the key players have played together and they're still in their primes. I mean, on paper, they should still be Super Bowl contenders. They just haven't played like it.
I really look at that offensive line, which is probably going to be their undoing in this playoffs at some point. They may not be as in as much trouble this week against a Lions defense that really does not have much of a pass rush. Six sacks, I think, over the last seven games. You know, you don't have guys that you thought, you know, Detroit's not going to have a way to take over the game, but I do see it being close. And I just don't think that Seattle's going to run away with it early.
It's too weak. It's the weaknesses of both teams going against each other. There's no stars on the Lions defense. There used to be, but Ziggy Ansah right now doesn't play like a star. DeAndre Levy doesn't play like a star, and Darren Slay is hurt. He's playing, but he's coming off an injury and didn't have a great game last week. Offenses dictate against Detroit every week.
I look at it like, sort of like, who would you take if the Seahawks were playing against, say, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the Panthers?
I'm taking the Seahawks.
Because I'm not sure the Lions are better than those teams. They're 0-5 against playoff teams. They've been losing in the fourth quarter of every game but one.
Right. Dan's question was the situation at halftime. I certainly think Seattle's going to win the game. I just don't think they're going to run away with it over the first 30 minutes.
You know, everything you guys are saying makes sense. But there's always one game in the wild card round that doesn't connect with what a lot of people expect to happen. And I get the feel it's no more than a Sessler, but I kind of get the feeling this is that game. And I think it's going to be a wake-up call for the Seahawks organization because I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say the Lions are going to knock off the Seahawks. There's no – I get everything makes sense. The Lions backed into the playoffs. They're a flawed team. But the Seahawks are a very flawed team, and I think you can make the argument they're a broken team. It's just people haven't quite realized it yet. They can't run the football, a hallmark of the great Seahawks teams. They don't defend in an elite way, which was another hallmark of Seahawks teams. And I think in a weird playoff game, I think the Lions win by a field goal.
It would be a weird bookend to the way that this whole operation with Pete Carroll began, which was a 7-9 Seahawks team winning the Beastquake mode in a game that no one thought. But I don't. You keep talking about the Seahawks defense not being the same, and they aren't going to be the same without Earl Thomas. But I don't see them being the defense.
I mean, they're not
is incredibly
up,
deep.
They're not going to give up 500 total yards.
It is, but
game.
then you think about, and I know the Cardinals are a good offense, you think about the other week where the Seahawks have a great comeback against Arizona, and then three plays right down the field, Arizona scores a touchdown. And then again, Seattle scores on offense, and again, they give up a game-winning field goal. And that's the type of thing at home you weren't used to seeing.
But is this Detroit offense capable of doing what a good version of the Cardinals is?
And the pass protection for Detroit hasn't been good lately. I think their one hope is that Matthew Stafford just does something special.
I think they are.
That he has it in him in his eighth season. He's carried this team to the playoffs. That in his eighth season, I know he's not 100% right now. He has to stay in the shotgun. That he just has a magical game. That he is the better quarterback in this game, and that he does it. And it's like, it's not winning the Super Bowl, but it would feel like that Lions team. It would mean so much to win a playoff game for the first time in 25 years.
You say that they can't do what the Cardinals could. They can do it a month ago. I know things have changed, but a month ago, Matt Stafford was an MVP candidate, and we were singing the praises of Cooter.
It's not the craziest thing on the planet. It's just that I'm looking at a Lions team that had a chance 3 weeks in a row to show us they can beat an NFC playoff team. They lost all three, and they lost the last game against Green Bay decisively.
You could argue that they're due.
I mean, that game.
Well, or that they shouldn't be here.
That game was 3 points heading into the fourth quarter. You know, but the fourth quarter Magic's kind of ran out. I mean, they were close against the Giants, lost close against, you know, last week against the Packers. I'm amazed we've made it this far and we haven't talked about Mark's boy, the emergence of Zach Zetter.
Hey!
I mean, he's in the news. He was on the cover of ESPN.com.
Yeah, Mark. Yeah.
This week with Michael Bennett.
I mean, I feel like
the best white running back in the league.
I feel like I did a poor job of him being my boy over the last year plus, where I don't think I mentioned him once.
But
on
he used
show.
To be in the preseason
sure.
a couple years ago.
If you would have handled it perfectly, which it was hard to do, you would have stayed on the radar over the last 2 years. Be like, hey, don't forget about Zach Zetter.
Well, I just remember
he's graduated from special teams player to a real running back that Michael Bennett, he couched it by saying, oh, he's like the best white running back, and there's like three of them. But he also went on to say, hey, he ran for 2,000 yards three times.
Well, I have a distinct memory of being, you know, roundly snickered at when I brought up Zenner. So maybe the next time I go out on a limb, we think about that response from the three of you.
Two years later, Mark
Sessler and Michael Bennett are wrong. Rex Burkhead, a much better running back than Zach Zenner. And Zach Zenner, purely,
well, I didn't call him the best running back.
Purely a north-south runner. He's not going to be making...
He's okay in the pass game.
He's not going to be making lateral agility moves at the line of scrimmage to make you miss. And I don't know if that's going to work again.
He has given them something, though, where they had nothing.
The one
he gets what's blocked when he runs straight ahead. That's what I think. And I think that if you think that the Lions running game is better than the Seahawks just because of what's happened the last 3 weeks to the Seahawks against fronts that they never play against well, the Cardinals and Rams, before that they were averaging 180 rushing yards a game for a month.
You forgot that 49ers game.
Well, they've got 6'8" twin towers on their defensive line.
They're literally the last ranked rushing.
Well, you know what you guys have forgotten about? The month before that when the Seahawks were averaging more rushing yards per game than any team in the league for a month.
And I think they got to play Alex Collins. Alex Collins to me has looked better the last few weeks than
you gave
Thomas
him a spark
Ross.
Last week, but I mean this is a team that has used 18 different runners, which is the most by any team since the 87 strike year. So you're going to see all these guys.
You don't think Collins has looked good?
No, I think it's an extremely small sample size. He got what was blocked. Thomas Rawls never had a chance to get anything. Just like earlier in the year when Kristen Michael couldn't get anything for a few weeks in a row when nothing was blocked, and then Rawls came in and they blocked for him. I think that you're taking too much from what's happening just between the blocking.
He runs hard, though. He's fighting through tackles. I like him.
So I'm hanging some big old onion on this game. You guys,
Walla
obviously.
Walla is a big onion. Giant sweet Spanish onions are
he's
good.
Right.
And a red Zeppelin is a big red onion.
Zeppelin. This feels like a giant sweet Spanish scenario.
The Zeppelin is the Cadillac of onions. The rest of you, I believe, are going with the Seahawks.
Well, I like how you frame that as if we don't have a creative bone in our body because we're not going with the Lions on the road.
But let's
see where we are on Sunday night's wrap-up show.
Yeah, I'm saying sometimes, you know, to the bold go the spoils.
Well, and sometimes, you know, sometimes fools, you know, make incorrect choices too. So we'll find out.
That's one of my favorite sayings.
If you wanted to be optimistic, by the way,
right,
about
can
the
we
Seahawks,
move on at some
no,
point?
No, let's talk about this game forever.
You know that
let's
we have
dig in
games.
Deeper.
All right, let's move on and get the Raiders and Texans out of the way. Because the NFL certainly decided like that, because that's why they made them the Saturday early game. And Mark Sessler, I think we'll start with you here, and we know the situation. The Raiders are running out Connor Cook, a rookie quarterback in his first NFL start in the playoffs against a Texans team that, just like we were just talking about it, Brock Osweiler, which I've never argued was a good quarterback this season, bad quarterback, back in the lineup because Tom Savage is hurt. Who wins this game?
Well, I thought that we could get into this conversation with a little game of Qualas to Fantasia. Did that accent not throw even more Periscope viewers into
no, that I think attracted some. It's very erotic.
For people that don't know, I don't know if we wanted to go down that road, Greg. For people that don't know, this game offers two potential fantasy scenarios, and we will decide, you guys will decide which one you prefer. Fantasy scenario number one, toppling his many doubters, Chris Wessling's Brock Osweiler stuns observers by unfurling four touchdowns in regulation before throwing a fifth scoring strike in overtime to knock off the Raiders. After the game, Osweiler, furious for weeks at the mean-spirited impression done by NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal,
I can't believe it,
suddenly retires on the spot to pursue a new career as a program director for the Austin, Texas division of Cuddle Party Inc., a movement that began in Los Angeles, and operates essentially as a structured, safe workshop to explore boundaries, communication, intimacy, and affection through the means of, in quotes, freestyle group cuddling. Or fantasy scenario number two. When seven ancient Egyptian pyramids dotted along the Nile River simultaneously rise from the earth tomorrow, various elements of our planet simply vanish. The Great Wall of China disappears into thin air. Stonehenge is no more. Easter Island no longer appears on maps. Cottage cheese, thankfully, no longer exists. And also, The 2016 Texans and Raiders disappear from our earth, leaving the NFL in a flurry to elevate the Tennessee Titans into a playoff showdown with the Denver Broncos, sparking this potential, basically sparing us this potential hideous matchup between the Raiders and Texans. Qual es tu fantasia?
5 touchdowns for Brock Osweiler and a Texans win. Then he retires, goes into the private sector. A great natural disaster wipes out, I'm assuming, millions of lives and several national landmarks. And the Broncos enter the playoffs to...
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, no, there's no death attached. The Egyptian pyramids uplift off the earth, and a bunch of other strange things disappear,
so
too.
So by this logic, you're saying get rid of a matchup that you don't think is attractive so that we can watch Matt Cassel versus the greatest pass defense of all time by some measure.
Well, it's the next two two teams that would have been propelled in. You'd get the AFC South winner.
I'm taking number one. Brock Osweiler's, you know, this matchup isn't too bad, so you never know what could happen.
I can't believe it.
Plus, I like having that sort of power over Brock.
I liked what you said, by the way, on NFL Network. Yesterday. And
it can't be. That's NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal.
You said embrace the what? Crazy?
Embrace the weird.
Weird.
I mean, this is better than any Texans-Bengals nonsense or, you know, Chiefs-Bengals sometimes the first game. It is so wacky. You will never see in your life again a third-string rookie quarterback making his first start in the playoffs. That's never happened against the biggest free agent bust of the entire season. And maybe Wes is shaking his head, oh, that's bad football. Well, you know what? This is going to miss. This is going to mean a lot to someone that wins. It'll be Bill O'Brien's first win. It'll be most of the Texans roster first win. It'll be the Raiders' first win in 15 years. So it's going to get weird. Embrace the weird.
This is a tired old Rosenthal bit.
It's not a bit.
Every
genuine.
Unattractive, appalling matchup must be fun football because it's that bad.
There's a line where it gets to be
fun. Both quarterbacks are so bad, they just keep going three and out, three and out, three and out. No great plays on defense. It's just pathetic offenses. I'm not buying it. There's going to be some fun game.
I see what both of you are saying, and you both make sense. Would I be surprised at all if this game is 3-0 going into halftime and we finish with 13-10 with a defensive score involved? Would not shock me at all. But also, this game's the expectations are so low, and you never know what's going on in sports. Maybe this game somehow becomes entertaining because the game teams are both at a similar level of mediocrity at this point.
I think one thing that we saw when these teams met in Mexico City was that Oakland, to deal with the Texans' defense, used their running backs as receivers to a great extent. And I think they're going to try with Connor Cook to do the same thing. And I have this weird feeling that Jalen Richard is going to be the centerpiece of this game. I'm not saying that's how they're going in planning, but weird players and weird things happen, and this is an opportunity for, I think, Oakland's backfield to carry the day potentially. They're going to need to.
Well, can I answer your original question?
Yeah, please do, yes. I'm confused at what the options were myself at this
point. You say no death, but the Texans and Raiders disappear from the earth.
Well, certain things that seem strange or unnecessary vanish, and where these two teams are right now, they may be in
those categories. Predicted there will be no Super Bowl, so this would almost be like a tremor before that.
Would be a major tremor.
Scheduled playoff game.
I like having Stonehenge in the Great Wall of China, and I really think that Brock Osweiler's calling might be cuddling people for a living. So I'll take option number one.
Well answered.
Oh, my gosh.
There's going to be a lot of fatalities. I know you don't want to say that, but we're talking to millions of people, bro.
Well, I'm not, you know, lobbying for that necessarily. Well, it's the scenario. It's not
so
what I want.
What's your fancy?
Huh?
I don't want the people
my fancy,
to die.
My fancy would be the first, where Brock Osweiler gets some sort of bizarre redemption story and then vanishes into a subgenre type of self-help scenario.
I've heard this narrative being peddled this week that Brock Osweiler is some sort of new man, that he's looser.
That
he's
saying that?
He's like...
I've heard it, too.
I've heard it.
It's been peddled.
He's looser. He's looser with the press. He's just letting it rip. Like, he was more decisive last week. I mean, watch the game. He was a mess last week. I mean, first of all, he's dancing around like they won the Super Bowl when he cut the lead to 7 against Matt Cassel with a couple minutes left, and they really had no chance to win. He had a chance to win the game. He went 4-and-out. Terrible decisions in the game. Not accurate. He never lets his receivers stay in bounds when he throws it deep, and that's how you beat the Raiders, is throwing it deep.
So basically the Brock Osweiler that we've been watching since early
right.
September.
That's all I'm saying.
I think what the peddling is about probably is that Brock Osweiler has kind of already hit rock bottom. He's kind of
rock bottom.
He's a Brock bottom.
Losing
guy
to Connor Cook would be lower.
Okay, maybe, but I'm just saying in terms of he's already laughed at as the worst free agent signing.
Lower than losing your job to a guy who doesn't exist.
Thank you. You've also already lost your job to Tom Savage of
Tom
all people,
Savage
and only
real.
And only got it back because Tom Savage got knocked in the head. I think that really he must be a little bit looser because he's already experienced the worst you could in the first year of this type of deal. Doesn't mean he's going to be good, though.
I think you do what you've done with Brock Osweiler all year. Have him hand it off to Lamar Miller, try to hit a few passes over the middle, and let Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Mercilus wreak havoc on an offensive line that frankly, Clowney clowned in the
right.
Mexico City.
And may not have Donald Penn. We don't know if Donald Penn will play.
That's the thing. They had 120 yards. The Raiders did with 11 minutes left in that game, and they finished it strong. So if Connor Cook is struggling this week, and everyone with the Raiders just, okay, Derek Carr is gone, oh, the season's over. This team won 12 games. Connor Cook had nothing to do with their defense not showing up last week, not being able to tackle. They couldn't run the ball last week. If you're a team, you should be able to survive some of this a little bit. Step up. You know, the offensive line play better. Connor Cook made a couple nice throws. I mean,
he did.
The defense has a great matchup here against Brock Osweiler. A lot of highly paid players. Well, let's step up, Khalil
also,
Mack.
Houston's defense, their secondary, essentially shut down Amari Cooper and Crabtree when they played – I think it was week 11, they held him to a combined 60-something yards. Cooper had a touchdown, but, I mean, if you'd say you could hold those two to that amount again, that's the recipe for success right there.
Who's your pick, Mark?
In this game, I am going to pick the Oakland Raiders in a very tight contest.
Chris Wessling.
I had the Raiders at first, but I think that Connor Cook, the game's too fast for him right now. That's what I saw on tape, and he looks like a turnover waiting to happen. He does have some wild throws. He's got the talent. I'm not picking a guy in his first start. I'm taking the Texans' defense in this game.
The Raiders are the great tragedy of the 2016 season.
They are.
They should have been the fun, one of the most fun aspects of this playoffs. Instead, they get wheeled in on life support, and I'm with Wes. Connor Cook is not ready for the stage. I don't love the Texans at all, and I certainly don't think they're going to romp in this game because I don't think their offense will put a lot of points on the board. But I am certain that the Texans advance to the second round. I am so certain.
Wait a second.
So certain, in fact. Brock Osweiler, come with me, because we're going to lock it up.
He brocked it up?
Brock it up. I'll take it.
Do you want to know how sure I am that you are wrong?
Whoa.
Whoa.
You're not going to.
No.
You can't brock it up.
I have locked it up 7 weeks in a row.
You wouldn't do
and
that.
And you can make it 8. You didn't want people to do boring locks. You're not going to get a boring lock. I'm locking up the Raiders.
Lock on lock crime. I
lock
love it.
Lock on lock crime.
Wow. I feel like I don't even need to make a pick at this point. It's all.
What do you got?
It's all forgetful. It's all a letdown. I'm going to take the Raiders. I mean, I think this.
I've got NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal on my side.
That's a good thing to have. He's in TV, which means he's better than us.
It's NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal.
This game's going to change. Oh, my gosh.
Well, ladies, please, control yourselves.
This game could change the future of the Texans franchise if they lose this game at home to Connor Cook with Rick Smith's handpicked quarterback. I don't think we should be that surprised if they have a new coach next year.
A lot could happen.
And if they win this game, I think the coach is probably around next year. So
what are you hearing from your fellow TV people?
Well, it was I've heard some things, but it was reported on Fox too that
Greg takes it seriously.
What's the word around the green room?
It was reported on Fox that O'Brien could be out. Doesn't get along with Rick Smith, and that this game might be.
I think that's not crazy at all. I mean, stuff is definitely going to happen if you drop two wild cards in a row.
I had heard out there that Rick Smith never saw eye to eye on the Osweiler signing with the head coach, and that could be friction. Remember,
O'Brien might see those jobs out there too and say, "Hey, I want those."
Yeah, a lot of options. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. Sunday games: the Miami Dolphins, the number 6 seed in the AFC, travel to Pittsburgh to face the Steelers. A lot of people excited, Greg Rosenthal, about the Steelers as a team that can unseat the mighty Patriots, but they got some business to take care of first, and that business is called Matt Moore.
Well, I don't think Matt Moore is their biggest problem. I think Cameron Wake and Ndamukong Suh are their two biggest problems, and if there's any recipe for Miami to try to win this game, it's similar to the way they won it in Miami, which is that they won surprisingly up front on both sides of the ball. We've talked about this Steelers offensive line as being one of the best groups in the league. Yeah, they got beat. They got beat in Miami. So that didn't have anything to do with Ben Roethlisberger. Cameron Wake won his battles in that game. And Ndamukong Suh won his battles. And I don't see the Dolphins having much of a chance in this game, but these are two of the most underrated players in the NFL, two of the best players at their position over the last 5 years in the NFL. They play right next to each other, and they got to do something special. It's asking a lot, but the two of them, Sue and Wake, have to do something special.
Remember,
they've never won a playoff game either. I mean, this is a big game for those two guys in this entire Dolphins team.
I can't get the memory out of my head of the Buffalo Bills just romping over this defense, and I don't think that was way back in what, week 6 when these teams played?
Yep.
That was also before the Steelers started to use Le'Veon Bell the way he's been down the stretch. I think this Pittsburgh team showed incredible amounts of electric power. They can do whatever they want when they're on, and I don't think that the Dolphins will be able to keep up with
that. More like solar power to me. It felt
they were powered
by the sun.
They're powered by the sun? Is this a night game? I hope not. We'll see.
I'll tell you what it is. Hang on.
It's early afternoon.
Early afternoon. The sun's out.
I was searching for a word, and I did not find it.
That was a completely different Steelers team
in
week 6. The rookies that they have on defense had not been playing much to that point. Sean Davis, since he entered the starting lineup, they're 7-1 with their only loss coming in that 35-30 game against the Dolphins. Artie Burns is playing pretty well at cornerback.
Artie Burns.
Bud Dupree came back and has given them an edge rusher, too. I think they're a totally different team. That week 6 game, they were relying on an injured Big Ben, and since then they're directing their offense through Le'Veon Bell.
He was injured because they were getting beat. He got injured late in the first half because they couldn't protect him. So I mean,
well, and now the Dolphins have the injured quarterback, and they got Matt Moore starting the game.
The Dolphins are in so much trouble because Byron Maxwell had one of the best games anyone's had against Antonio Brown all year, and he might not even play in this game, and that is a huge loss.
They're also in trouble because Big Ben at home has a 116.7 passer rating, and away, a 78.4 rating. He is as good at home as any quarterback in the NFL.
And he has never had Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell in a playoff game at the same time.
People forget that. Yeah.
I think that's they almost beat the Super Bowl winning Broncos without Antonio Brown on the road last year. And I think this is a much better team than that Steelers team.
Mark, I thought that you made a good point about the defense of Miami being exposed in that Buffalo game, and they certainly did not play well. But I also look at the other side of the ball is a reason why you could get excited a little bit as a Dolphins fan in terms of hope. Jay Ajayi, who had been slumping, you know, and kind of regressed it for several weeks going into that game, went off, had another 200-yard gain, and I don't expect him to rush for 200, but he showed, hey, I still got that in me. I'm having a special season. I've rushed for almost 1,200 yards since week 6.
Right. Ran for 204 against Pittsburgh when they met. That may translate more than anything we saw from Miami.
I'm kind of with Wes on that. I don't even put too much stock into that game. It feels so far removed.
It's so long ago. But
just in the sense that Ajayi is not a guy that's like, oh, Jay Ajayi has not rushed for more than 67 yards since week 12. Like, that was thrown out the window when he had a monster week 16. Yeah.
They need him because they need to hold on to the ball. It is such a tough ask for this team. But then you think about the Steelers, and they are great, and they're balanced. Their defense has been great. But let's be honest, the last time they had a meaningful game, you know, they gave up a big-time drive to the Ravens that, by all accounts, could have knocked them out of the playoffs. I mean, the Ravens got the ball, needing a touchdown. They went right down the field, and they got it. They trailed big-time at halftime against the Bengals. They trailed big-time against the Ravens. So as good as they have been, it's the NFL. It's not like they're blowing teams out.
Well, the other thing I saw in that game, though, was how Big Ben sat on the sideline while the Ravens drove right down for that touchdown. Not a look of panic, but the complete opposite. The guy is supremely confident. They know what they could go. They went right down the field in a minute and won the game. So
but
that's
with a little
Steelers
bit of bad
offense.
Luck there, Kyle Juszczyk, you know, falls at the 1 yard line. They score the touchdown 30 seconds later, and the Steelers are staying home for the playoffs, which is so wild to think about.
If the Steelers have a weakness, it's like you guys said. The defense has not faced a stiff test since the Cowboys, and they're not going to face a stiff test in this game either.
Wow.
Matt Moore is not a guy I see going into Pittsburgh. I mean, just from a macro viewpoint, Matt Moore is not going into Pittsburgh to me and winning this game. I'm picking the Steelers. I think a lot of people are, and it's because this seems like it could be the most lopsided game of the week.
I think
they
so
are
too.
The biggest favorites. of the week?
Well, I think we're saying if Pittsburgh plays to its heights, if they play to their full power, this game would not be close.
Hmm. Let's pick them. So I got the Steelers.
Well, let's play a little game first.
Oh, you want to play a game?
Oh, wait. Did you write up a game?
I almost forgot about it.
You went to the writer's room?
We were going
to
do it.
Scratched out a game. What do we got?
Well, you know, you guys know, you guys have alluded to that I'm, you know, a recovering addict for many years, really, on this program.
For multiple issues.
Right. But, you know, we're talking about the horses. Picking games. So you got to do some things. It's kind of like taking a nicotine lozenge or whatever. You got to do some things to make up for that. So you can't do over-unders at the NFL. So we're going to call this not over-unders.
Okay.
All right.
I like it.
Not over-unders. Not over-unders. Le'Veon Bell.
The drop puts you in a tricky gray area.
Not over-under 150 yards.
I don't know what that means.
No, I get it. You know. Just, you know, a little wink. It's just a little wink. Sometimes all you need is a little wink.
So I say not under.
Well, I don't even know. That's a good point.
I think he will have more than 150 yards. Totally.
150 yards from scrimmage.
I think he's been waiting for this game since he came into the NFL, and he's going to have a monster game. And I think if you set the not over under at 175.5, I take the over.
Wow.
It's going to be a big one.
He averages 157, which is the third highest total in NFL history. Mm. And I don't like the Dolphins linebackers. I don't think Dolphins fans like the Dolphins linebackers. I'm going over.
They have given up, I think, second to last in the league in rushing yards per attempt. That's not all, though. We got another one here. All right. Not over under. One half of a conversation. Or no, wait. Let's do this again.
All right, here we go.
One half of a dirty play by Ndamukong Suh that inspires a Jim Nantz, Phil Simms hand-wringing conversation.
I'm going not over.
I'm going he's going to seize the moment. That's the thing about Suh. He always raises his dirty game when the spotlight is on him, when the lights go up. Thanksgiving, 2 years in a row he did it. He did it against the Pats with a terrible offside shove of your poor center, Greg. And I think he's got a good one in him. And it'll probably happen later in the game when frustration is set in. I'm thinking groin stomp.
I think he's going to go through the whole game without one of these wacky things that we have to write 4,000 posts about.
That's what you're hoping.
Well, he's not really been that guy this year.
So you're going over, under, under.
He's been that guy for 99.9% of the games he's ever played.
Well, I'm going under the not under, the not over, whatever we're calling it. It's not happening.
Yeah, this guy is one of the most misunderstood players in the league. As Greg said, he's underrated. He's always one of the top three defensive tackles in the NFL. And he's done like two dirty things ever compared to Vontaze Burfict, who does two every game.
Well, that's not fair. He's been voted by the entire league as a dirty guy.
Because everybody watches Thanksgiving games.
All right, let's be the best player on the field.
Ask LeGarrette Blount what he thinks.
Let's be the best player on the field.
Yeah, LeGarrette Blount's a great source.
He's a very, very down-to-earth guy, LeGarrette Blount.
Should we do one more or no?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Please. This is just a joyride.
Not over under. Three sideline shots of Ryan Tannehill where he has the excitement of a 9-year-old boy.
I'm going not under, meaning it's going to be Ryan Tannehill solo shots all day long.
I love his enthusiasm.
Well, they're going to be getting killed in this game.
Well, that's
we'll find out.
Somber shots with Jim Nantz and Phil. And he's like, team, the Dolphins have a bright future with that guy on the sideline. Oh, very, very true, Phil. This is a tough game, Jim, but they'll be back with that man. Something like that.
If I did not want to save my lock for something else, I would even lock it up that you're going to see more than three shots of him looking morose.
I want to apologize, by the way. Right before the pod started, we were talking about Lock of the Week. And I did – I felt like I was inadvertently or ahead of time trying to shame people. Don't pick the Steelers because it's too easy a lock. But I want to say, you know, lock them up if you want. Wes, and I'm directing
Well, hold on.
You.
I just locked up the Raiders with Connor Cook.
Well, here's the problem. So. There's three heavy favorites this weekend, and you guys – both were locks in the other
you have
game.
To have,
so
I took a road team with no quarterback.
I'm not sure what happened here. I feel good about it. But it feels like everybody's got to live by a code with a lock of the week. I wouldn't feel comfortable picking the Steelers, but they are, to me, the biggest lock of the week.
I was never tempted to pick the Steelers. I have not liked from the beginning. The idea that in a segment called Lock of the Week, you have to take something that's like an underdog to happen. It seems weird to me.
I also, Wes, would not bite the hand that feeds you because the Lock of the Week made you an internet legend. Just remember.
I don't even believe I'm an internet legend.
A legend. I mean.
You might believe it.
We'll all be gone.
The hand that feeds me already declared vengeance on me.
Not talking about myself. Oh. The segment.
I was like, did Dan just call himself the hand that feeds the rest of the room?
I kind of like that.
That's controversial.
I mean the segment itself.
Oh, okay.
When you locked it up.
I've become a huge fan of Lock of the Week. That's why I don't like you putting all kinds of parameters on it.
It's been very good to you, the whole Lock of the Week.
Yeah, I'm just saying maybe
good for the Wesleyan
a little
brand.
Respect.
We're essentially having a production meeting
1 cent
during the show.
All right, so that's the game. We all have the Steelers, correct?
I'm picking the
please.
Steelers.
Yeah, okay, let's move on. Sorry, Dolphins. Nice season, though. And, you know,
Dolphins fans they
coming at me. You talked about the Jets more than Dolphins. Well, you know, deal with it. Start your own podcast. Get off my back.
Oh, my God, that whiny guy?
Hold on, though. One thing I will say, that is one fan base that has sneaky been through more seasons
that
are unpleasant than many, many others. And there are a lot of, you know, our friend Handsome Hank is a Dolphins fan. I mean, I wouldn't be unhappy to see him smile come the end of the weekend.
Given recent events, I don't want that. But I will tell you this. It was a nice season for the Dolphins, even if it ends in a less than glamorous way.
And yeah. I've heard a nice lot season. Of this. Like, oh, you know, no respect, you know, no talking about. Like, look, you got outscored by 20 points this year. Both your offense and your defense were less than league average. Like, go in week 17, you know, you got blown out by at home against the one seed. So go do something.
Well, respect comes in game. If you ever pull this kind of thing off, the people
They've
are going to be talking about the Miami Dolphins in
and
a completely different way.
All right, you've talked yourself into Matt Moore. Congratulations. That's quite a feat. Doesn't mean the rest of us have.
I don't think Matt Moore is their problem. I know that's crazy.
Oh, that's a big problem.
I don't think it's that. Their quarterback play since the average Ryan Tannehill game and the average Matt Moore game has not been much different, period.
All right. Okay.
I think Matt Moore's missed throws.
I do too. But
and I think
you
got to throw out the Jet game too.
People forget
it's not going from Big Ben to Landry.
Right. People forget the first 6 weeks of the season when Ryan Tannehill was one of the worst five quarterbacks in the league.
All right.
Yeah, but then there was a large sample where he wasn't. Also has the highest QBR in the red zone in the league. Mm.
Finally, let's call it the main event of the wild card round. The number 5 seed New York Giants traveling to Lambeau Field to face the number 4 seeded Green Bay Packers. A game that features a Giants team that with arguably the league's best defense taking on Chris Wessling, a team in the Packers with a quarterback playing at an all-time level right now. You gotta love it. So why don't we play, Wes, one of our favorite games.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
A matter of trust. What do you got?
Who do you trust?
And you don't come after me, you know, people with the infringement. There's no music there.
That
it was just a man talking.
That was spoken word.
He was just reciting. It wasn't the alphabet. He was counting.
Tell me that this can be. We could be sued for this. Tell me.
1, 2.
Maybe. Oh yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
You know why?
I wouldn't want to push that envelope too far. They may have a case.
If it was just like 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, but when he's getting into 1, 2, I mean that's his own
that
thing.
That was Delaware frontman Greg.
That was pretty good. Greg is feeling it.
Anybody want to take me on a prop that was singing?
I would.
That was singing.
No,
it's
under.
Not,
I think
not singing.
I don't think it's all out and
not
out singing. I think that the Billy Joel camp would say it's a musical property.
What?
I don't think I'm qualified to weigh in on singing.
That was just a man counting.
Okay, well.
All right, Wes.
Also potentially something they could argue.
Yeah, why don't you join the rest of them on the third floor, Mark, with this attitude?
Be happy to. Put it in my pocketbook.
This is a matter of
a pocketbook.
I don't know why I don't have a pocketbook. Sorry, Wes.
Lavio Magnifico.
I do not. I don't
People don't even say pocketbook, much less a 40-year-old man.
Mom's in 1991.
Put it in my wife's pocketbook. I mean, I think we pegged Wes as wearing a petticoat a few years ago, so all bets are off.
I don't even know what a petticoat is.
Well, you wear one.
All right, Wes, a matter of trust. Go ahead.
What the hell's going on out here?
Wow, that was timely. It's in Lambeau Field, Vince Lombardi.
That's nice. True. All right, what do you got?
Speaking of Lambeau Field, who do you trust? A Giants defense that has improved steadily and significantly throughout the season, shut down some of the best offenses in the league, has the best secondary in the NFL with Defensive Player of the Year candidate Landon Collins, the best cornerback duo in the NFL, Rodgers-Cromartie and Jack Rabbit.
Jack Rabbit.
versus or the run-the-table Packers with a quarterback playing at the height of his powers, Jordy Nelson recapturing 2014 form, Jared Cook coming up big, Davante Adams double-digit touchdowns. Who do you trust? Which this is, as Greg said, this is the best matchup possible. Who do
Giants,
you trust?
Who do you trust? The Giants defense versus the Packers offense?
Yes.
It's a great question.
Especially the passing game. I trust the offense almost implicitly in the year 2017. This is an offense league. You look at the NFC, Packers, Falcons, Cowboys. As great as the Giants are in a big spot like this, I'm always going to take a diverse offense like the Packers. Forget about the running game. You don't need the running game when you've got six different receivers you can throw to with Geronimo Allison and Jared Cook and everyone in the mix. That's who I
think. Yeah, I mean, we're weeks off of calling Green Bay the team that no team in the NFC wants to play, that you don't want to deal with if you're one of the bye teams, that Aaron Rodgers is the hottest quarterback in the league right now.
Physically.
Sure, north of Matt Ryan. So I trust the Packers offense. If you can't
you think
take
Matt
care
Ryan's
of business,
hot?
The second hottest quarterback in the league?
I mean, you guys are coming at it from a completely different angle than I am.
Oh.
So do you want me to – shall I continue on to answer these
questions?
Are you
talking about as a football talent?
Yes.
Oh.
A white-hot football talent.
Okay, I thought you were talking about the physical nature.
I go offense.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that they're going to score 50 points on the Giants, but they're going to take care of business.
I agree. I'm going with the Packers offense only because we're dealing with a historic player in Aaron Rodgers playing at his peak. And the Giants have a very, very good defense, but I wouldn't call their defense historic. And if this game was being played in New Jersey, maybe I could talk myself into a little bit more. But I think the fact that the Green Bay's last six games, Rodgers has played the position at a level that few have ever matched. That's how good he's been. Matt Ryan's matched him, by the way. But in general, Rodgers has been almost a perfect quarterback in their building. They're peaking at the right time. I got to go with the Packers offense.
They're showing the Eagles highlights up here. I would point out that they didn't even shut down Carson Wentz when they lost to the Eagles.
No, I thought about that.
I see this game more like the Steelers game, 24-14, back in early December, where the Giants simply didn't have the firepower to keep up. Mm-hmm. And they kept the Steelers in check for most of the game, but still, 24 points is enough to beat the Giants. I see this as the edge goes to the Packers. I'm with Greg. We haven't seen the defense in the NFL this year that can shut down great offenses.
Well, you know, that Eagles game's a tough one to bring up. They still gave up less than 300 yards, which is, you know, less than the leading team in the league gives up on average. They've done their job week after week, and the matchup I'm kind of fascinated to see is when it's third and long, the blitz. I mean, they're the best blitzing team in the league because Dan's boy Spags has just been cooking it up because he knows those guys in the back end can cover one-on-one. Jadoris Jenkins, Rodgers, Cromartie, they have depth there with Eli Apple. Leon Hall's, you know, made some plays.
Also, Aaron Rodgers, number five against the blitz.
Right. So I want to – because I think that's what the Giants do. I think they're going to keep doing it. I wish Jason Pierre-Paul obviously was available for this game because if you're just looking top to bottom depth of talent, the way that Vernon is playing right now, the way that Snacks is playing, Snacks might be the key to this whole operation here. He has been playing so well, and you can't run on this team. This Giants defense is about as talented as they've ever been when they won the Super Bowl.
I don't want to sell the Giants defense short either because they have stopped great offenses this year.
Held
the Cowboys to 7 points in a win. Held the Lions, who have had some problems on offense recently, but to 6 points. And then in week 17, the Redskins, with everything to play for at home, 10 points.
It's not that it's going to be some sort of a wipeout. I think location for me has a lot to do with this. This is in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau Field, his statistics are insane. And I just don't see if they can get a couple big plays and some early scores, how does the Giants offense possibly keep pace with that? I don't think they can.
I guess if you were going to make the case, it's because they're playing the Packers defense. It's not a great defense. I mean, who gave up 350-plus yards to Matt Barkley, who gave up the same to Sam Bradford, that starting Demarius Randall and, Ladarius Gunter. I mean, I don't really see the Giants wanting to get into a shootout, but the matchup is right for it.
The Packers would do well to get Eli Manning in a shootout.
Right.
He should have thrown another pick six last week that Josh Norman couldn't hang on to. This guy, I'm proud of you guys. Not one of you has mentioned the yacht. You haven't mentioned Eli, what he did 10 years ago, as if it has anything to do with this game.
I didn't get to that yet.
Yeah, it means nothing when he doesn't physically throw the ball as well as he used to. Giants have good talent on offense. Sterling Shepard is a talent. He is electric with the ball in his hands and has really not done a whole lot this year because of his quarterback. Odell Beckham should have 18 or 1,900 yards, not 1,300 yards.
But wouldn't you say in the win against the Lions and the Redskins, it's hard to play that sort of way against Green Bay, but that's the way the Giants got to win. They almost hit Eli Manning, and they waited for him to make maybe one or two throws at the end of each game, and you know what? He made them. I mean, he made a very nice throw down the sideline last week to help put it away. I believe, who was that to? Tavares King, I think. And he did the same against the Lions, where he's got a running game. Suddenly
you're playing with fire, Scarecrow, when you're asking Eli to make one throw. Just because he did it two games doesn't mean he's not throwing
all
a pick
I'm saying
six
is
next
he,
time.
He looks better
Look
when they have a running the game, and they have a running game
right
now.
They do finally. After well, that being a total weakness,
let's
it's
be honest
better.
About what that running game is, though. It's a lot like the Packers running game, where Ty Montgomery's only effective out of the shotgun. Paul Perkins is only used out of the shotgun. Mm. When they go with a normal formation, Rashad Jennings comes in.
Now I will disappoint you, Wes. I think it does matter that the Giants, as an organization with Eli Manning
Woo-wee!
At quarterback, have twice as heavy underdogs went into Green Bay and won games. And you know why? Not because it was the same Eli physically, and he's probably not that same guy anymore, but the team believes they're not going to be intimidated at all because they're thinking to themselves, this guy turns it on in the postseason. He's done it twice in Super Bowl runs. He's kicked Aaron Rodgers' ass twice in his own building. And I think that they'll feed off that energy, and they've been hearing about it all week. Hey, you know the Giants have had success in Green Bay with Eli. I think they're going to believe it, and I think that they're going to play better than people expect because I do think Eli gets better in the playoffs. I don't think that's some phony narrative. I think the numbers.
He hasn't been there for five. He's almost never there.
He hasn't.
He actually has the record for most team games in a row between playoff appearances by a quarterback.
Okay, he's also
has as many playoff wins in Lambeau as Aaron Rodgers.
Evaluate the game, not the name.
He's also I got you. But he's also – I know everyone wants to throw him out of the league now.
Actually, no. The only people who will say anything about Eli Manning bad are in this podcast studio. Everyone else says, like you, that because he went into Lambeau Field when he was a much better quarterback, it matters in this game.
It's other people are down on Eli right now, not just you, Wes.
You wouldn't know it on our network.
I'm just it's different. I'm just saying everybody's ready to throw this guy out of the league. He's not 43 years old.
I'm not ready to throw him out of the league.
He's
I'm
35
saying something's
years
wrong
old.
With his arm, and he's not making throws.
I think he just turned 36. We celebrate all these other guys, and including big brother Peyton, who threw for 55 touchdowns at age 38. I think it's premature to say that Eli Manning's done off one bad season, and I think it's premature with the weapons he has on offense that he could step up, raise his game in this game, and he plays like Eli Manning that people remember in January.
Yeah,
I don't think it's crazy.
We can argue.
I think it's crazy.
It's not. We're not looking back 5, 6, 7 years to say that Green Bay has found a way to underperform when it matters most in January. It's not just the Giants games. It's every season an incredibly talented team with a great quarterback has found a way out of the playoffs. And that sticks. They still have the same coach. They have a lot of the same players.
Same defensive coordinator.
Will they be able to get the ball back? I mean, I know it's Paul Perkins, but the Giants have done a nice job time of possession. Will they be able to pressure Eli? Clay Matthews has been up and down, almost all down this year. I think this Giants team is almost fun to watch for the first time in a while. Eli Manning is absolutely a supporting player, but the rest of his teammates, including Odell Beckham, who's right there with Rodgers as the best player in this game, they're good enough to just win it.
Right,
know?
And I can't remember a team that had a poor Manning at quarterback and a great defense winning the Super Bowl. Oh, wait, it was just last year.
All right, let's pick the game. Mark.
Despite what I just said, Packers.
Give me a score. Let's get the scores in there.
I'm going to go 24-13.
Okay. Wes.
Winter is here.
Ah.
And I'm locking it up!
Not surprising, but
Packers
logic.
Win.
Score?
27-14.
All right. I'm not going to go all in on Eli because I do think that he's shown enough where he could lay an egg again. So I won't pick the Giants. But I think It will be a close game, and I think the Packers advance because Aaron Rodgers does something special at the end of the game to get it done. Make it 30-27, Packers.
I'm feeling good about this one for the Packers because we deserve it as football fans. I know the Giants are kind of fun to watch, but wouldn't you love to see Aaron Rodgers versus the Cowboys? Or, depending on what else happens, Aaron Rodgers versus Matt Ryan? That would be so much fun, and I think we deserve it. Then I'm going to lock it up, too.
Whoa.
But we're out of games. We're out of games.
Double lock. And for the record, we are, I believe, 19 of our last 20 in the locks. If we can get out of this, well, we won't because we're in a lock-off, Mark and I.
Yeah.
But if we can get out of this 3-1, we're either going to go 3-1 or 1-3.
Well, it'll be a great moment for us that probably the four of us will remember and nobody else.
Lollipops for all of us. All right. I'm excited. I'm excited about the playoffs. Always am. And now they're here. So that's good. Hey, before we go, I want to get on the phone. An old friend. Not that old, but we've come to really admire this man, both for his football acumen, his history as a beat scribe in the New York metro area, which is not easy, and most of all, for having a mortgage. He is NFL Media's Connor Orr.
What's going on, everybody?
Hey, Connor. Hey, buddy. What's going on? You getting excited for a little playoff football this weekend?
Oh, sure. Yeah, this is, this is for all the marbles, you know. This is when it gets exciting.
Is that an original phrase, all the marbles? I never heard that before.
Yeah, this is, it's just one of the things I do. Come up with good stuff. So.
All right, so one of the things.
It's one of the things I do.
Come referencing a parlor game from roughly, 70, 80 years ago.
When Connor hits me up on our our instant messaging client, or via text, I always respond as quickly as possible. It's like the bat signal being thrown up. And Connor said, "Hey, something's going on. There's a big situation going on in my personal life. I want to share it on the pod, so I'm going to throw it over now to Mr. Orr in his haunted mansion in New Jersey to explain to us what is the earth-shaking news out of the Orr camp in this the earliest days of 2017.
We're back on PlayStation, baby, and we are bringing Chip Kelly back. I mean, this is white hot, and everyone can play along.
All right. Now, which PlayStation unit are we talking about?
3.
PS3, you're still on the PS3. I was with you. We were the last two active PS3 users. I moved on. Santa took care of Daddy, got me a PS4. So now it's just you alone. What's it like to be part of the PS3 army that's really down to one man and scattered people across the country at this point?
Well, it ended up being super helpful because, as you know, they stopped making the college football video game due to the lawsuit, the players' lawsuit. So
yes, that was unfortunate.
So I have the last one on PlayStation 3, and Chip Kelly needed a job. He was talking about going back to college, and EA Sports left up the team creator website from like 2013, which allows you to still add franchises. And the only school at the time with a vacancy were the Minot State Beavers of North Dakota, and
Minot
we're rolling
State.
Now.
Minot State. I'm going to quickly Google them. Minot State.
Our new motto is why not? It's Minot.
Minot State University is a four-year institution of higher learning in Minot, Minnesota, founded in 1913 as a normal school. Minot State University is the third largest university in North Dakota. Why don't we start right there?
Really a hotbed.
Yeah, let's start right there, Connor, because Chip Kelly's taking over that program. He's already kind of behind the eight ball in North Dakota in terms of recruiting, and he's the bronze medalist in North Dakota in terms of university prestige.
Not only that, but just the battles in southern Canada, too, I mean, that you really have to think about.
True.
For sort of the best football players there. But a nice thing about the game, which is actually kind of sinister, is you can promise things to, like, these 17-year-old people that you're recruiting. And so I just tell all these kids that we're going to win the national championship in our first season. I guaranteed it.
What do you think about the theory or fact that it's pronounced Mino State? The T is silent. At least according
to... It's an interesting...
It was before Chip Kelly got to town.
Rename it.
If you click the little pronounce it button on Wikipedia, I believe you might change your little tune there.
And are you going... So you may, depending on if Wikipedia is correct or not, you might be changing the pronunciation of the university. Are you planning to change the mascot, which is the Minot or Minot State University Buckshot?
Right now, it's just a beaver, and that's what we're going with.
Okay.
So I think that works well for everybody. I think it kind of embodies Chip and his aggressive sort of burrowing offense. And
kind of looks like a beaver.
That's what we're going
to do. Yeah.
I thought that Connor was going to, you know, the recently married Connor announced that maybe a child was on the way, but this is much bigger news, I mean, much bigger development.
If this is the other side of the spectrum. This just shows how far away Connor is at that stage of his
yes.
life at this point.
I have one follow-up question. I know in the past you said that I think one of the reasons that you walked away from PlayStation / video games, not only because you're an adult, but secondly, that, you know, once you got married, the situation changed. Where do you play this? Like, are you in the living room? I thought you were out on the deck before or something like that in the past, out on a covered deck playing this game. Very concerning.
I sort of have, one of the rooms I kind of turned into my office, but it's also... I call it the laboratory where we sort of create and think about the next big ideas. And I will mention that if you go on the EA Sports website, you can download the Minot State Beavers that I created.
Wow.
And you can play with them yourself.
Whoa, that's pretty fun.
If you have a PlayStation 3.
If you have a PlayStation 3.
And you're the only one who does.
There's scattered Americans and people across the world,
that's
but not
though.
Many. It's not a concentrated group at this point.
I feel like we should just say as a public service announcement, if you happen to be in the Mino or Minot area, the baseball team's hosting the inaugural MSU Baseball Ice Fishing Tournament January 21st at Lake Audubon.
I mean, if you're not there, get there.
You guys are all laughing about Minot State. You know who's from Minot State? The actor Josh Duhamel?
Yeah.
Dale Brown, Shaq O'Neal's former basketball coach.
Love Dale Brown. Wasn't he in, what's that basketball movie?
Minot State, also chips? Nicknamed the Magic City or Little Chicago.
Oh, make sure you pitch that to the recruits, especially the kids from the Chicago area. Hey, one last thing. What's the slogan again?
Why not? It's Minot.
I think the town, if they're pronounced differently, needs to get its act together, rejigger the pronunciation to this, because the whole town, the whole community could really take that slogan and run with it.
I'm open for suggestions, but get at me. You know, I'm here. I'm here doing them. I'm pumping them up. I want to bring them a national title, and that's my goal. That's what I'm going to do.
There's a lot of internet buzz out there that you are mispronouncing the name of your university, that it actually is pronounced like Ross Perot, so it's like Minot.
Well,
then someone should talk to Wikipedia, because I've been working off of this knowledge for about a week, and I've been very passionate about it, and I'm not going to change my mind.
All right, so it's a new.
There's actually a lot of disagreement, Connor.
I think
the locals are with you, even
yes.
if it's not technically correct.
Okay, well that counts for a lot.
Americans are known never to pronounce words with a French accent correctly. We don't do French accents.
Well, I wish you the best of luck, Connor. We all do, as you attempt to raise the Minot University, State University, into a superpower. I think it's going to take a little bit more than just the promise of a college title. But don't underestimate Chip Kelly. He did build a giant at Oregon.
Mm.
We're hosting Alabama week one in Minot. Get some.
All right. There you go. There is the mouthpiece for the Minot State University Buckshot.
He always believes in Chip Kelly. I'm not surprised.
He stays a believer. All right, Connor, thank you. We'll talk to you later.
You know what?
Goodbye.
If the Brett Favre family can thumb its nose at the English language, then Connor can pronounce that college however he wants.
Well, especially in this forum.
It's not an unusual, by the way, corporate maneuver. It's called rebranding. And if Chip Kelly thinks that is what's going to get the kids from South Florida and Southern California and all the great hotbeds in between to Minot, well, that's what they're going to do.
Just makes sense.
All right. There you go. That is our if anyone is still watching on Periscope, that would be impressive. Thank you to Connor Orr for giving us a window into his very unusual life. The next time you will hear from us is Sunday night when we will recap all the games that we just previewed. So make sure you're there. That will also be Periscope. So make sure.
There's still a lot of people. There's a lot of people still watching.
That's a pretty decent number. So thank you, everyone that's watching. And that's it for now. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and La Seed / New Money behind the glass. Till Sunday!